You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, February 10th, 2010. This is episode 118, Church Logos and Super Bowl Parties. It is time again for the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology and its impact on, and its potential impact on ministry. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I'm joined, as usual, by Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and I think we're going to talk about more than technology today. I think we're going to talk about the world champion New Orleans Saints this morning. Did you see that football game?
I saw most of it, yes.
Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. The only thing that stuck with me about the game, and I didn't have a vested interest in either side, unlike yourself, was just the crummy commercials. I thought it was really a down year for commercials.
Yeah.
Or was that the time you went out and got chips?
Yeah.
You were more interested in the game.
I was actually watching the game this year, yeah. I wasn't too impressed with the halftime, I guess. The old guys.
When you get in your mid-60s, we looked it up at home. I thought, how old are those guys?
And, that's,
you know,
right.
They're both in their mid-60s. Yeah, I don't know.
I was trying to figure out who they were appealing to with that, because definitely an older crowd that would appreciate songs from Tommy and all that the Who has done in the past. Mm-hmm, so, but interesting nonetheless. And
no wardrobe malfunctions.
No, that's good. So, and I hear, you know, I'm kind of in the presence of a champion and should acknowledge that as well, because I understand you've recently been crowned champion of an exciting tournament yourself.
Yeah, I entered a tennis tournament a couple weekends ago, and my body is still trying to recover, by the way. So I played 6 matches in 2.5 days, and that hasn't happened in probably 25 years. So I was fortunate enough to get a lucky draw and some good bounces, and I won the thing. So, and that was not something that I shared on Facebook, but my loving wife did, and then it spread virally, as things tend to do on Facebook. So we made it all the way out to Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, apparently.
How about that?
Well, so I got my first trophy in a while. So.
Did you get a big trophy?
A plaque.
Vince Lombardi style?
It's a plaque, yes. No, it's not a perpetual trophy that goes around from household to household, like the Stanley Cup. But maybe I'll take a picture and post it up there someday.
We'd love to see it. Congrats.
Thanks. All right, well, we should actually talk about technology. We've talked about the wide world of sports. Let's talk about technology, and we're going to focus on specifically an item that probably every church has to wrestle with at some point or another, and even schools, and that's the logo. What is the brand? What is the mark? What is the identity, the designer's identity, you know, for a particular congregation? Sally, do you have a logo at your church?
Well, I do, Martin, and I'm actually the one that suggested this topic, because we are just approaching that concept of when is it time to make a change to our logo. Mm-hmm. Our logo is a beautiful line drawing of the congregation, and I just noticed the other day I have one of the old-timey plates from our congregation hung on the wall, and it's that same line drawing. That must be where they got it from when they had that plate done in 1960 or something.
Yeah, but your church is not unusual. I think a lot of churches have that had that done and have that as their current logo even.
But with the, you know, the web and the advent of color, and the ability to do printing in color for a relatively affordable price, it seems like it may be time for us here in Sleepy Eye to update our logo. And it actually raised a lot of questions for us. You know, where do we find a designer? How do we go about doing this? Do we want to have the same logo for the church and school? Just a lot of different aspects that I thought, you know, it would be good to talk through that on the podcast for the benefit of all the churches and schools out there.
Right. And it's a very trendy topic. You see a lot of articles written about it, and I know congregations that are going more online than off are taking advantage of some of the things that they maybe couldn't have taken advantage of before. And that's certainly, you mentioned color. There's a bunch of trends away from kind of the traditional church logo as well. excuse me, I've read a couple of articles lately on creating Web 2.0 friendly logos, because you can, and every Web 2.0 service has a logo, and a lot of churches are kind of picking up on that and trying to, not keep up with the Joneses, but be current at least, and, you know, make sure that people that see their logo view them as relevant and, not sitting back in the 50s or 60s.
You know, and there's a lot of different components to logos. Certainly you want to pay attention to color, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You also want to pay attention to your typography and the types of fonts that you're actually using there. And
send a message, right?
Exactly, send a message. Kind of like that the medium is the message concept, huh, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
About that.
Yeah,
and,
you've been listening.
You know, you also want to understand your target audience. You want to know who you're trying to communicate with and what they're looking for and what they're used to seeing, what their standards are in terms of websites and, communication and logo messages, kind of thing.
Yep, and it's not something that you really want to rush into, because it does have impact across a lot of different aspects of a church's ministry. First of all, you're going to want to have it appear in every communication that you have, whether that be online or in print. So that means some cost associated with redoing letterhead and envelope, and you're putting it on your statements. And obviously, it's got to go on your website, perhaps in the yellow pages. So as a result, you want to make sure that whatever logo you design is going to work across all of those applications, because you're still in a print world, and maybe your church doesn't have a color copier. You're going to want to make sure that the designer, whoever it is that you pick, is adept at both creating color, but also something that's going to work in the black and white world.
That's right. Here in Sleepy Eye, we're real big on running ads in the newspaper. We're very much paper-oriented here in Sleepy Eye. So having something that works in a black and white format is real important to us.
Right.
And choosing a designer that's knowledgeable enough to give you all those different formats, so that you have the flexibility in the future. You have large versions of it. You have, different file formats, maybe even a transparent format, maybe some variations even on your main logo, so that you could have a separate logo for an athletic version for your school or something like that.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, there's a lot of different aspects to it, and you don't want to, shortchange yourself as you're doing that design process.
Yeah, I know some of our Final Web customers struggle with logo placement because, let's say they've got a square logo, but in some of the Final Web templates, it calls for more of a horizontal layout. So it's always good to have your designer create a couple of different variations for different spaces. And some of them are going to work better on a masthead for a newsletter. Others would work better for a bulletin cover. So it's really important to get some flexibility built in. And then once the designer does it, make sure, as you mentioned, getting it in a bunch of different formats. You're going to want a TIFF. You're going to want it in EPS so that it can be scaled. So if you ever want to put this on a billboard or something in a larger format, a poster, you're going to not be constrained by just a small size that would typically go on a letterhead of a newsletter or a newsletter, something like that. So, Sally, did you guys talk about budget? Are you going to look outside for an outside designer?
Yeah, our initial thought was to look for maybe a college student graphic designer.
Good idea.
In that realm, that there's a lot of different options there. You can also look internally, and we may have some resources right in our own congregation. We were going to explore that a little bit as well, because more and more people have those skills of graphic design. And boy, wouldn't that be awesome to find a designer in your congregation, and then they could design things for events or whatever it is that you have that you want to promote within the school or congregation.
Yeah, I think our congregations need to be a little bit more aware of it than they are about about the different opportunities for imagery that could be created. Any sermon series or any event that you want to promote is a good candidate for some kind of imagery, whether it be a logo or an image with text, something that attaches a visual, you know, to the event is always a good thing, and especially if you're not always going to have to print it, that you could use the web or other digital marketing resources to advertise. Really, all that you really have to do is create the imagery and then publish that, so you're not having to worry about whether it's in two color or four color and all the costs associated with that. So there's no reason not to do that. And if you've got somebody in house who you can tap on the shoulder and say, hey, we're running this sermon series, or you know, maybe we need a logo for VBS or Festival of Friendship or whatever it is, I think that's a great use of talent like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, for those that don't have that kind of talent right at their fingertips, you can always look at other congregation or school websites, find the logo you like, and check with them to find out who did their logo for
yep.
them.
Have to live in your town because of the way things work and the internet age that we're in. Your designer or the person that you asked to do some design work for you does not need to be local. They can be anywhere in the country or the world for that matter. And there's also other online resources that you can use if you really just don't have a designer at your disposal. There are a bunch of websites, and we'll put those links in the show notes. And this is kind of an emerging market of freelancers out there who would bid on your project. So you essentially post what you're looking to do, and they will present their credentials and a bid to do your project. And then you can pick and choose who you would like to work with.
So lots of options there. Just expect to spend a little bit of money, potentially
right.
$250 to $1,000 as you, you know, go into designing
a
new
investment.
Logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure you're getting what you want from the process. Make sure you get lots of different formats and layouts and things like that
mm-hmm.
so that you're covered in the future
right.
for whatever your needs might be. A couple of articles we want to link to in the show notes as well give you some more ideas from Collide Magazine, Martin.
Mm-hmm. Collide Magazine is basically a magazine for church artists, and they have a lot of great articles in there. There's been a couple recent articles on logo design, so take a look at those. And then there's a Flickr group. Flickr has, or a pool, they call them pools. The Church Marketing Lab has a pool that anybody can join, and church artists can post their work for review. And I enjoy watching the feed that comes through it. I have it through my RSS feed, where I can see what kinds of programs or events they're designing for. They'll do T-shirts. They'll do ads for sermon series. Just some great stuff flowing through there. Very creative folks on that pool.
Right. So even if you aren't, you know, in the market for a logo at this point, this is a good pool just to learn from and to get a feel for what's trending and in design and what's working for other congregations.
Absolutely. Great stuff. So, and I guess the final bit of advice is use whatever you create. Obviously put in the energy and the effort to create something that you're really going to want to use, but then look for every opportunity to use it, because you're trying to attach a feeling, a flavor, a brand, as it were, if you want to use a marketing term, to your organization. And you've invested time and energy. Make sure people are attaching that to who you are. And that means, you know, looking for opportunities to plug it.
That's right. And do it consistently. Adopt it for the long haul. Use it all the time.
Yep, absolutely. So that's church logos. If you've got ideas or you've maybe gone through the process recently and would like to share your experiences, let us know, and we'd be happy to share that with the class, as it were. Let's go on to our interview for the week, and that is part two of an interview that we played part one of last week with Pastor Don Patterson from Holy Word in Austin, Texas, and Bill Esslinger, who's now up in St. Paul, Minnesota. They have a radio/podcast ministry called A Reason for Hope. And we're going to listen to our continuing conversation with them as they begin to explore, or we explore with them, how they transition from mostly just a radio ministry to a podcast ministry, a ministry leveraging web resources. Let's listen to that interview now.
So at some point you decided to go on the internet as well, and that's actually how Martin and I found you. I, through a friend connection, found your Facebook page. You have quite the following on Facebook, and you have a website, areasonforhope.net, where you post your radio shows in podcast format. So tell us what prompted you to make that turn onto the internet to just as a distribution channel as well.
And it was just what you described, but sort of a turn or a change in our understanding of how we were reaching people. We started with just trying to be on a weekly radio program, 30 minutes on a weekend. And then around 2006, we got to the realization that we've put the audio always on a single page that was connected to Holy Word's website. But around 2006, we came to the realization, first of all, that we were reaching more people through the internet than through the radio broadcast. And secondly, our identity was separate enough from the church that it deserved its own website. So we at that time, we did develop our website. And going back to that first point, our thinking was that we want to be on the web so people would learn about the radio program. And now that's kind of flipped in that the radio program is a way people learn about our website and can have easier access to a host of messages rather than just being constrained by time and space on a radio program. The website is 24/7. The radio program, you know, happens once a week at in a 30-minute time slot. So our understanding of it was kind of turned on its head. The radio program now more or less advertises our website and gives people access to a year's worth of messages or programs and content about God's Word than the other way around. And that's been with the podcast and the website, and we have an email list. Most of our contact with people now is through those technologies instead of the radio program.
So how is the Lord, do you have any examples of how the Lord has blessed this work, either through you know, dialogues with people that have brought them either closer to their Lord or introduced them to their Lord, or people walking in the door at Holy Word?
Don, do you want to take that?
Well, we've had a couple of things. For a while, we were on a radio, another radio station to the west of town. The radio station we're on, have been on all along, is on the east side of Austin. So we're out in the hill country, and there was a gal that was driving during her drive time every Sunday to be a nurse was during our broadcast. And so she contacted us by email and said that she's having to miss a lot of church and that she really appreciated our teaching. And then she referenced a sermon and how she had a breakthrough in learning how to forgive someone because I was preaching on Jesus and his statements about forgiveness after the Lord's Prayer in Matthew 6, and then also talked about Joseph forgiving his brothers. That's one example. Another one was a man who was a driver for a limousine business, and he was catching us on Sundays, and he said that he appreciated the emphasis on grace that he doesn't hear so often on the radio, and sent us a gift and wanted to support the ministry. There's a host of people in Wells World or Wells members' friends who, when they find out about it and they're living remote from our Wells churches because there's so many places in the world that we're just not there, that this will become one of the things like Time of Grace and other ministry that they'll go to for their Sunday sermon. Mm-hmm. And so I got an email from a college girl that was doing her semester in Spain, and she said, thank you so much for our broadcast because we were her church. And then a family that was in Spain for a year and a half, and also later in another country in Europe, they just circled around Reason for Hope, sang hymns, said prayers, and then just listened to a sermon off of Reason for Hope. Mm-hmm. So that's just a handful of examples. There are some more.
And obviously, I'm guessing you have web statistics to support the website traffic and your email newsletter and that kind of thing that speak well of the the web portion of the ministry as well.
That's true. We currently get between 20,000 and 25,000 hits per month on the website. And in addition to that, we send out an email to about 150 subscribers that just give a summary of the messages that were broadcast that month. So those are two other venues that people, that we stay in touch with people who are listening.
So would this be, you know, we've got a lot of number, a large number of congregations that listen to this podcast, you know, those that are lay members interested in technology, those that are pastors, teachers. Is this something that a typical congregation could do, or is this really kind of a special set of circumstances that kind of fell together in your particular situation?
What we've learned and our experience has been it's well within the grasp of a congregation. Like we said, the money expense really isn't that large. We paid between $75 for that 30-minute time slot in the Austin area to $150 for a 30-minute time slot in the Twin City area. So the that comes out to dollars of somewhere around $8,000 for the year for the more expensive broadcast. So the And that's maybe that's a little bit beyond the reach of a small congregation, but it's certainly not beyond the reach of a if two or three congregations pair together and share that expense.
Sure.
And that's what's happened in the Twin City area. There's been two congregations that have paired together, and with Reason for Hope, we pay the cost for radio airtime, which is the only financial expense that we have, because everything else is done by volunteers. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the audio editing software is small, but takes some time, and that's why. One of the things we try to emphasize is this partnership. If it, we're support any congregation that wants to put on a radio broadcast in their local radio stations, we'll share with them what we've learned and how we do it. But if you don't have the time and resource, one way that you can get on the air is with a shared resource, where a Reason for Hope provides a lot of the content, but the local congregation would pick the radio station and do a management of when we're on the air, and help support it with airtime cost. And the other thing that happens through that is we craft the closing to basically advertise that local church as our partner and a person to go to if you have questions about what was taught. So we're hoping we do that now with two churches in St. Paul. In the future, we'd like to do it with make it available for more congregations.
I would say the one thing that they need to, if they're looking for what do we need to have, the financial resources, you don't have to have a lot, but you need to have at least one, if not, to do it the level we're doing it, if not two, highly dedicated Christians who are dedicated to outreach with the gospel. This tool. When you get a sermon, getting it to the finished product. How many hours, Bill, do you spend a week?
It's somewhere between 10 and 15, with the bulk of it spent on audio editing, and then smaller amounts of time spent on maintaining the website and the Facebook page.
So what's next? I'm sure you have some kind of vision for the future. You've been at this 4 years. You kind of know what works, what doesn't work. As you look over the next few years, is it just more of the same, only better? Do you have different expansion-type plans? Where do you see this all going?
The main place we see it going is, as we've been doing this the last 5 years, 4 years, we're building up a cache of radio programs that are done, finished, basically ready to be put on the air. And as we're currently around, our number is currently around 150 as far as number of programs that we have. Mm-hmm. When we get up into the 250 program area, we'll have enough of an inventory to consider and think about going to a daily broadcast, which is really raises your exposure from small to something significant.
Sure.
If people are hearing you on the air on a daily basis, you really become part of their life and their routine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of our long-term going down the road, to have enough content to be able to support a daily broadcast. At that point, we'd probably have to have some full-time staff and And I thought one of the things I forgot to mention is we've gotten good advice and help on that vision from the folks at Time of Grace, Mark Jeske's mm-hmm. program in the Milwaukee area. Now, their niche is TV and our niche is radio, so we think there's room, plenty of room for both of us to be involved. But they've Jim Johnson at that program has done a good job of sharing his experience with us and kind of letting us know what he's learned and where we can go with it. But if we're still here 5 years from or a couple years from now, I think our goal is going to be a daily broadcast in either Austin or the Twin Cities.
Also, we have the if you look at our website, we have some excerpts from sermons that are about 2 to 3 minutes long, and those are really good devotional moments that we think we could also, if we could build an inventory of those out of the sermons that we have, we could also get daily broadcasts that are 2 or 3 minutes long on some stations. And then hopefully we'll also be able to produce more devotional material for our website and links to books and things like that, that we can maybe have a more material relationship with the people that would visit us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this sounds like a wonderful opportunity for ministry, and you're using some traditional tools and then obviously leveraging the web resources to extend the reach of something that would have been fairly narrow, at least in the beginning. And you're using content that you're doing anyway, so it's not a stretch. You're coming up with a sermon every week regardless, It seems like a natural fit. I suppose if a congregation were interested in considering this, you guys would be willing to consult with them if they wanted to give you a call or shoot you an email?
Be very happy to do that.
Absolutely.
And go ahead, Don.
We'll link up with them any way we can. If we can help them set up their own, or if we can, they want to help be a part of ours and use it for mm-hmm. their outreach to their community, any way that we could.
Right. I want to, first of all, thank you, Bill and Don, for taking the time to share with us your ministry. And we will, in the show notes, put all the contact information and links. Again, that website is areasonforhope.net, and you can grab the information there and check out the samples. And you guys, thanks so much for taking the time, and blessings on your work at A Reason for Hope.
Thank you for giving us the chance to talk about it. We appreciate it.
Wonderful. Sally, it was interesting to kind of listen through the process as I think they were initially thinking, hey, this is just a radio ministry, to, hey, this web thing is going to get some traction here too, where there's people coming, there's listening, there's more that we can do on the web than we can do on radio.
Yeah, it's always exciting to see how the people respond to these ministry efforts, and mm-hmm. we just wish them all the best continue to grow and expand, and hopefully more people will know about their ministry through this podcast interview as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, blessings. And thanks, guys, for taking the time to share that with us. We have some ministry resources we'd love to share with the folks, Sally.
That's right. This one came up for me in choir last week, Martin. Mm-hmm. We were singing a new song in choir, and you know, one of the things that's always helpful for me, and I'm sure many who sing in choir, is to hear a recording of the song.
Right.
And it just kind of makes the rhythms flow a little bit easier if you can hear someone else do it first. And so we were having that discussion in choir the other night, and our pianist said, well, maybe we can find a recording on hearchoirs.net. And boy, my ears peaked, and I said, what is hearchoirs.net?
Anything with a .net peaks your ears, doesn't it?
That's right. And so I went and checked it out after choir, and basically it's an online collection of choir recordings or snippets of recordings from various choirs singing a wide variety of choir music. Mm-hmm. And basically you can put in the name of your song that you're singing and do a search and come up with matches of recordings of that particular song. And I did a little bit of searching. I can't say that I found everything I was looking for, but several of the songs that we've seen recently were posted there. And like I said, you don't get the whole thing. You get a clip of it, but it gives you enough of a feel of a song to, you know, be able to get into it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. So for those of you that are heading up music activities in your church or school, this may be a benefit to you. Hearchoirs.net.
Yeah, and I bet there are choir directors out there who have struggled with this and probably even have some other resources that they could share. So please do. This is I'm not a singer, and although I've been they've been recruiting me endlessly at Peace in Hartford, and I'm not sure exactly why that they're doing that. But the fact that somebody can hear a song going in before they sing something cold has got to be helpful. I would think.
And I know in the past we've shared links to YouTube videos where we've found, you know, choirs singing it and posting video of them singing it. So any of that kind of thing does help quite a bit.
Sure. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Yeah, I have a fun pick to share. I picked this up from my Twitter personal learning network, and it is World Math Day 2010. And there's a really cool website, World Maths, M-A-T-H-S, Day, and I'm sorry, .com, mm-hmm. worldmathsday.com, where you can register your class and compete against students from around the world in a 60-second time challenge where you answer questions at varying degrees of difficulty. And it's a lot of fun. And even though World Math Day is set for March 3rd, the games are online now, so you can play now in preparation for the March 3rd big event. And even if you can't tune in on March 3rd, your students can benefit from being part of this math competition with the preliminary practice rounds and that kind of thing. What you do is you sign up as a teacher, and then it allows you to go in and sign up your class without having to have email addresses or anything like that for them. You just put in a name, and you could even use fake names if you wanted mm-hmm. to, if you wanted to protect the students' names or initials or anything like that. You put that in, and it generates a login username and password for each student in the class. And then they log in, and basically to play the game, click on a level that you want to play at, and there are 5 different levels. I played at the easiest level, and I got some simple addition and multiplication facts. At the harder level, I was getting into decimal numbers and negatives and positives, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. And it's basically a 60-second thing where these math problems flash up, and you type in the answer. The twist to it is when you want to play, it matches you up with 2 to 4 students from around the world that are online at that exact same time, and you play against them. Mm-hmm. And you can see how many they're getting correct during that 60 seconds. So it's kind of a race to see how you place. And I think the students will just love that, you know, aspect of it, that they're actually competing with students from Australia and Malaysia and Turkey and, you know, just all over the world. Cool. They're online doing this math challenge, and they're tracking how many correct answers. Right now they're at 39 million correct answers so far, and it's just a lot of fun. So
how did you do?
Well, I did pretty good. One time I got second, but the other times I got first.
Okay.
So. These students can be pretty cutthroat. You have to watch out.
That's right.
And basically,
they got younger minds than you, Sally. I'm sorry.
Exactly. A little
sharper.
Faster.
That's right.
3 strikes and you're out. So if in the 60 seconds you miss 3 problems, then you're out of the competition with your pool of, you know, people that you're competing against. So it's a lot of fun.
Neat. That's World Maths Day.
Correct, with an S in there.
.com or 2010.com?
Nope, the date's not in the URL. It's just World Maths Day.
Cool.
So. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Good. My pick is actually a variation of a pick I've had in the past. We've talked about Digo before, D-I-I-G-O, which is a kind of a delicious competitor, but very popular in educational circles for social bookmarking. And I think they've been adding some nice features. And one thing that they just launched recently was the ability to use Digo with a Chrome extension. I use the Chrome browser, as I mentioned in the past, and now I can have a Chrome extension, this Digo plugin, that works right within my toolbar. And it's really cool. I've been actually, right after we record this podcast, I'm going to be heading out to Minnesota to talk at a pastor's conference on digital outreach, reaching out in a digital world, it's called. And one thing that I do, obviously, is refer to a bunch of different websites and some statistics and some articles that I like to point out a couple things. And what Digo allows me to do, or this plugin allows me to do, is highlight a page. So I can go to a page and click the Digo button and then drag across the area that I want to highlight. And then whenever I come back to that page, I can see what I highlighted. So that allows me to kind of pick out the things that I want to present in real time. And it's essentially an annotation of the web. Now, you can add sticky notes. You can obviously bookmark pages and tag them and share them. There's all kinds of other features related to this as well, but I found this extremely helpful, and I would think that teachers would probably find this helpful too, as they're maybe referencing web pages in a class where they don't have to write down or copy and paste. They can just go to that web page and see what the highlighted sections are of that particular page right in line as the student would see it, except you've got it right there in front of you. So that's the Digo plugin. And I think there's a plugin for every browser type at this point. Chrome just started to accept extensions, so Digo launched in with their extension. And really well done. You can have different color highlights. As I mentioned, you can have sticky notes, all kinds of cool stuff that help you annotate the web. Really good for presentations, I'm finding.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Bible classes. Maybe congregations do Bible classes focused on current events. Like once a month, they'll have a current event Sunday, so people can just discuss, you know, what's going on in the world in light of God's Word, and being able to, you know, pull together the resources for a Bible class of that nature with it all pre-highlighted and you know, thought through would be a real benefit to keeping that.
It's nice. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. So, all right, moving along, we've got a couple things that we want to remind our listeners about, Sally.
That's right. One came across our desk last week, Martin, and that was the fact that Martin Luther College is actually looking for nominations and applications for their position of director of IT information technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Glenn Bode, who's been there for many years, is retiring. So they need to replace that position, I believe, effective next school year, I want to say. Either the next or the year after. But I think they want to do some dual directing, as it were. So they're calling for nominations and applications right now. And you can go on MLC's website, and we'll put a link to that in our show notes and see what all the requirements are for that particular position.
And what better audience to hear that announcement than our Wells Tech listeners?
That's
so
right.
Who knows?
So.
Maybe one of them will fill that position.
Exactly.
You never know.
Yep.
So also wanted to make mention of the fact that we have some training coming up, Martin. Mm-hmm. We're both involved heavily in this final Web for Dummies class that's going to be offered in Milwaukee, New Ulm, and Saginaw in the coming months. And all the information for that class is online at bit.ly/FW4Dummies. And we'd love to have you join us if you're a Final Web customer and maybe want to notch up what's going on your website. We hope to offer quite a bit of good information in those 3 days.
Yep, great stuff. And that is certainly an area of a church's digital ministry that you want to spend some time. Websites are extremely important, and kind of your your first calling card to a potential visitor. So it, you want to put some time and energy into it. Shall we move on to community feedback?
You bet. We've heard from several of our listeners this week, and just a lot of exciting stuff going on out there in the congregation settings. First up, we heard from John Shoesmith, who's out in Washington State and works on the Redeemer Yakima, Washington website. And they've been doing some online Bible class and doing live streaming of their Bible class. And we talked about this last week, Martin. They were just getting started. They had a second week of it, and with mixed results, I guess John would say, that some was good and some was bad. And one of the main components of doing any live streaming is having a good internet connection. And they ran into some difficulties.
Issues
with bandwidth. And, you know, what's so hard about it is you don't know if it's you that's having the issue or if it's the streaming server. In their case, I think they're using Ustream.tv to do their streaming.
Yep.
You know, were they having a heavy night and it was on their end? And, you know, kind of a lot of variables that are a little bit out of your control. So that can be frustrating.
Yep.
But good feedback on their chat windows. They are using the Mibit chat. We talked about that a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that the translation process is very accurate.
Right. Yeah, they actually worked with one of our Spanish-speaking pastors, Gonzalo Degadillo, and did some testing and found, and he commented that this was a pretty good translation, and sometimes that's not the case, but apparently they've got some of those things figured out, and that's great news for some of our missionaries in different applications like this.
And Gonzalo, it sounds like, is seeing the potential, so
yep.
Who knows what's coming down the pipe with John teaming up with Gonzalo.
Oh,
they
yeah.
may be doing all kinds of interesting things. We'll have to keep our ear open for that.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely, a dynamic duo there for sure.
Yeah. We made a little bit of a late notice of a comment in our Google Friend Connect sidebar on the Wells Tech podcast. We heard from listener Mike Polinsky, and he commented that he's using an iPod touch application called Bible Scope. And Bible Scope actually has the NIV translation of the Bible available for offline usage. Several different iPod apps will allow you to access the NIV version of the Bible if you have an online connection, if you're connected through your cell company or through a wireless connection to the internet. But Bible Scope actually has the NIV for offline usage at the cost of $30.
Right.
So, you know, there is a trade-off there. You have to pay for, you know, the fact that you have that privilege to use the NIV offline. But he's really happy with it, and he says he thinks it's worth the cost. Not an app that I've tried personally, but maybe some of our listeners are looking for an NIV app, and Mike is happy with it.
I see this, and we talked about the iPad last week, as a great application for that. You have a little bit larger format, and something that could be very usable as a reader, and what better thing to read than the Bible, especially whenever you want it. So you don't have to necessarily be online with this particular app, apparently.
Next up, we heard from Kevin Smith. He's a listener at Christ in Zumbrota, Minnesota, and he had a wonderful solution to share with our listeners, kind of harkening back to an old episode from last summer, Martin, where we talked about backup alternatives.
Yep.
Back in episode number 74, which happened to be our fried dill pickle episode. So, good memories there.
Fried pickles episode, yes.
Yeah. And
he asked a very important question here.
Oh, yeah, I was going to skip over that. Do they serve fried pickles at Super Bowl parties in Sleepy Eye? Unfortunately, not.
No. Oh, my goodness.
We got a good idea from that, and my husband promised
next year
that we'd make some soon. So, anyway, the real news that Kevin wanted to share with us was the fact that at Christ in Zumbrota, they have invested in a new backup solution, and it's using Microsoft's home server backup. And I'm trying to read and summarize. He probably says it a lot better than I would summarize, so I'll just read a little bit. It's based on Microsoft Server 2003, has the capability to automatically back up a maximum of 10 computers, can stream video, pictures, and music to PCs on the network, offers remote access to the server with Microsoft ITS.
IIS.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
And can be used as a website for pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So for their congregation, they paid about $525 for a computer with the software, a gig of RAM, and 2 terabytes of storage, and set it all up through a website administration tool, which he said was really simple.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody with a basic understanding of server administration could use that. And they're serving 2 secretaries, a pastor, a vicar, 4 teachers, and he serves as an off-site administrator, and they're all making use of this solution. So he thought it was definitely worthy of sharing with our listeners as being an affordable solution that congregations may want to look at for backup.
Yeah, very solid, especially if you are a Microsoft Office using Church Office and of the smaller variety. I think this would be a great fit. And what I really like about this is the off-site administration. Administration is really the gotcha in some of these kinds of solutions. And if you can save yourself from having to go in and find some time to go in, if you can do this from your home or office, that's a great win. And I think he's got a good setup there. We'll look forward to progress reports as they work through this.
Yeah, and he shared a couple of links to Home Server Show and WeGotServe.com.
Mm-hmm.
That we'll put in our show notes. So if you're interested in more details, you can check those websites out.
Thanks, Kevin.
And lastly, we heard from Pastor David Ernst. He's at Gloria Day in Tinley Park, Illinois. And we talked about Pastor Ernst last week, Martin, because
yep.
he was looking through our archives and noticed one of our podcasts was missing.
And now we know why he was looking through our archives.
Yeah, he wrote with a few more details for us this week. And basically what he wrote to share with us is that he has downloaded all of our podcast history. Boy, that's a dedicated listener.
Yeah.
And he is finding value in going back and listening to different ones as he has different needs in his ministry. You know, accessing those archives and learning from them, you know, over time as needs develop.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, he went through and basically did his own library configuration of the podcast archive files and cleaned them up. We had some different naming conventions over the past 2+ years of doing the podcast, and he's kind of standardized all that, written in descriptions and things to that effect, and has come up with a really wonderful resource of all the different podcasts from our archives. So,
mm-hmm. Very good. So if we ever lose one, we know where to go.
That's right. So
they're awesome. Anything else, Sally?
Nope, I think that's it for community feedback for this week, Martin.
All right, we've got a very special week next week, and I'm sure one that Sally is looking forward to with eager anticipation, and that is continuation of our book, not our book, but the book we're reading together and talking about, The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture by Shane Hipps. We're in Chapter 4. This one's entitled Electronic Media, Planting the Seeds of the Emerging Church. We get down into some nitty-gritty conversation about how this thing called media is affecting the church and its message. Very interesting. And we also hope to have a very interesting interview, one that I'm looking forward to, with Tony Vincent. And if that name doesn't sound familiar to you, Sally and Tony have a history.
Thanks, Martin. Yeah. Lucky me, in my end-of-year picks from 2009, I unfortunately selected Tony's website, learninginhand.com, as one of my worst picks, meaning it wasn't something that I thought was going to be particularly useful to our schools at this time. And I got a little bit of backlash from that.
Yes.
We hashed
the
that
Tony
out
over Vincent
several
Army,
weeks.
Yes, attacked.
Yes. And Tony, being the gracious guy that he is, you know, was just really positive in his response to our webcast, and he agreed to come on and talk to us and help educate me, because obviously I need it, about handheld in the classroom. So he is definitely looked to as a leader in this area of education, and we feel very privilege to have him join us on our show. Looking forward to that.
So tune in next week. Don't miss that. I'm looking forward to it. Let's close the show with the music of In His Service, their song Send Me from In His Time, the album In His Time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.